Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
All right, Professor, what do we got latest from training camp? What did you see out there today at practice?
Well, I mean, I think the one thing you can see, injuries are starting to mount up. That's the bad thing because I saw a lot of guys standing around. Byron Maxwell, then, of course, Rashard Penny gets his hand hurt. You saw a bunch, of course, you know, the bad situation at the tackle spot because big, bad injury right now to Jamarcus Jones with a bad high ankle sprain. Isaiah Battle, maybe not too bad, but he's down probably for a couple weeks with a knee injury. So you saw a lot of that. Still thinking we're seeing some good things at the receiver position. Another good day for Brandon Marshall. Another good day for David Moore. That's looking encouraging. I think you saw a little interesting things over in the secondary. I think that they were giving some of the other guys with some of the injuries. Well, as we mentioned, Maxwell and Nico Thorpe. But, Trey Flowers, who had the good 31 plays the other day, they were giving some of the other cornerbacks a chance. So I think it was, kind of a good day as they try to at least get closer now to game number two.
I'm really disappointed to see number 22 over there on the sidelines, too. What's the story on CJ Procise, John?
He's hurt hip. I mean, hip problem. I don't know. It's like he should probably change the name to CH Procise, which is C hurt Procise, because unfortunately, here he had made it through everything. He had gone through the OTAs, clean, no injury. Minicamp, clean, no injury. The first 14, 15 days of practice, no injury. And then all of a sudden, here comes a hip. And so he wasn't out there today. And, what you have to wonder with this, and again, I think this really is a talented group of running backs. I thought it was talented last year. They just, with the exception of Chris Carson and Mike Davis, just didn't perform well. And then they had injuries. But I look at this group and see a lot of good things. And what you wonder, if he was sitting in the number three hole healthy, is he now in the number five hole at running back? Because Mike Davis did some good running the other day. It's Carson and Penny 1-2, and J.D. McKissic, I think, is too quick and too valuable and too versatile to let go. So, now I think with this injury, C.J. Procise keeps everybody wondering if he's ever going to be healthy.
John, you mentioned the running backs last year, and I thought the same thing. We thought that this was going to be a really good group last year, too. I don't know. I do think it's a little bit different. The only thing is we didn't know. I thought the big mystery was Thomas Rawls. Him and Alex Collins both, we didn't really know what they were about. Any news on those guys? Because I think, is Rawls with the Jets now?
Yeah, Rawls is with the Jets, and he's having a pretty good camp from what everybody's saying. So he's doing some good things, as he did last year. But I don't know what it was. It just seemed like his body was there, but his mind wasn't.
Right.
I mean, he overran things. He didn't seem to run the right plays. I mean, it was brutal. And so, you even saw when he got into December, he was really making some bad judgments on the field. So it's like a running back who just kind of forgot how to run the football, and that's where he was. And again, the talent's there. I mean, you saw that he gained over 800 yards in a short period of time a couple years ago, but now that seemed to vanish.
It's kind of funny. Like, I feel like everybody that can come out of that, like, with the exception of Eddie Lacy, might actually go on and have success. I mean, Alex Collins, 973 yards rushing last year, mm-hmm. six touchdowns. And it's just weird how you get guys in a different system. And it seems like this one's really making sense, though, this year. I think Solari and what Schottenheimer's doing right out there, it seems to really fit this group, whereas last year maybe that just didn't fit that group of running backs.
Yeah, and then of course, there was not one voice to fix it. So whether it was going to be the play calling of Daryl Bevel, whether it's going to be the pass blocking scheme that was set up by Tom Cable, it became too predictable. It became too beatable. And so with that in mind, I mean, things started to continue to regress all season long to a point where, they were outscored by 44 points in the first three quarters. They generated very little on offense. And then, finally, it put Russell Wilson in a chance every week to have to kind of make scrambles in the fourth quarter to win in order to try to get a chance to win.
Any chance, John, that Trey Flowers will start against Denver?
No, outside chance, yeah. I mean, the longer that Byron Maxwell, and again, he's not like he's missed a long period of time, but, the more practices that he misses, the more chances that I think they go to Trey. What I look like with Byron, he's on a one-year, $2 million contract. And so I look at Flowers as being a up-and-coming cornerback who looks as though if needed, he might be pressed and be able to go out there and play. I think you'd be better served to have Maxwell there. But let's say that if Maxwell's hurt or he doesn't speed things up at getting back on the field, they might go with Flowers. I think that, you know, he's clearly put himself in the number three cornerback position and then did so well in the 31 plays. He flipped his hips real well, which is something was he was criticized for not being able to do in college. And what you like is that he works hard at it. I mean, he's a good student of the game. He has to work on some stuff on the short area. That's why you still like to have Byron Maxwell out there. But I see good things from this cornerback.
The other guy that we saw out there today is Dante Johnson, and he's getting up and starting to practice more. He's a guy that, look, he's been a starter in San Francisco, and they signed him with the idea that he can compete for that starting job. I'll be interested to see if that competition for Byron Maxwell's starting job, because if Byron's not the starter, he might not be on this roster.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It could come down to one of those two, best man wins. And, you know, I know that, you know, like Bob Condotta, who does a good job of trying to pick the 53-man roster, has Nico Thorpe not making it. I think right now Nico Thorpe still is going to make it for a couple reasons. He's a very good special teams player.
Very good.
He's not that. I mean, they don't have much as far as a backup slot guy, you know, as far as behind Justin Coleman. I mean, you know, Nico is at least helping out there at the slot. He's doing some outside stuff, and I just think he's a good football player.
Any other injuries, big-time injuries, John? We saw Darius Geis in Washington. Man, how disappointing that must have been. But what's sort of the injury roundup around
the NFL? San Francisco. I know Richard Sherman was back on the field doing some stuff today off his hamstring injury, but they suffered six injuries, the 49ers, in the game on the other day.
Yikes.
I mean, including Malcolm Smith with a hamstring injury, and Eli Howard, Harold got knocked up. I mean, yesterday in practice, they lost you know, Jerick McKinnon, you know, he got a knee injury, maybe like an MCL, so he's going to be out a couple weeks. Mack Breida, who is looked like a pretty encouraging number two running back, he's got some good speed. He's going to be down for some time. I mean, nobody's going to be out into the season, but a lot of guys that may not be back in the preseason, and that really knocks them down, and particularly at the linebacker spot. I mean, you know, the areas that they can't afford to have any injuries are at linebacker and cornerback. And where I say cornerback, I mean, Antoine Exum. I know a guy that you really follow well, Danny. I mean, that's one of the bigger names that's on your list. Anton Exum is like the number three guy and might have to step up and do some things.
Exum.
Exum?
Exum.
I'm familiar with eczema. That's a skin condition, right?
That's correct.
I remember his name just because it was very odd.
Yeah.
I couldn't have told you what position he played, though.
Yeah.
Exum.
Exum.
John, you know what? Also, how about Alfred Morris? You know, I guess I just kind of lump him in with RG3, mm-hmm. where, you know, that 1 year in Washington was really good.
Right.
And then now he's back with the Niners. And is it part of that? Did you mention there, is there some running back injuries there?
Jerick McKinnon. See, again, a lot of people say they paid $7.5 million for Jerick McKinnon. But, I mean, he is the perfect back for the Mike Shanahan offense, because what he does is that he's quick to the hole. I mean, he knows how to be elusive. And he was one of those guys that you see in camp and you say, uh-oh, this guy's going to be good. But now he got hurt yesterday with the knee injury and will miss, you know, several weeks, and so that's why they brought in Morris.
John, what's going on down there in Jacksonville? Sounds like there's all kinds of things going on with Jalen Ramsey and Dexter Fowler.
Yeah. So what happened was that, you know, in the case of Ramsey, he got into it. I mean, basically what happened, it was like a Richard Sherman to Jim Moore. And because
what?
Huh?
They were gonna.
Can't wait to hear this.
They were threatening to pull some credentials. What was going on?
No, I mean, what it was is that I guess one of the photographers and one of the reporters, you know, they were taking some pictures of some things on the field, and Jalen Ramsey objected to it, and so he puts out a mean tweet and was in the guy's face and all that stuff, and they weren't going to tolerate that. In the case of Fowler, I mean, he got into it in a little bit of a practice fight, and got into it verbally, and they didn't tolerate that, so they both get suspended for a week. But basically, you know, Ramsey pulled a Richard Sherman on Jim Moore, who, and the guy down there is not named Jim Moore, but that's what happened, because, you know, he was posting some things, and Ramsey didn't think that should happen. And apparently Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone felt that, hey, I'm going to side with the media on this one. You can't get that abusive to the media. So you should be proud, Jim, of what Jacksonville and the front office did to protect the media.
Really proud of Jim Moore.
Really proud of Jim Moore. He threatened war on reporters after it. Now, the part that I don't understand about the story is that the issue was a fight between Dexter Fowler and a teammate. that it attracted. And that's why Fowler ended up getting suspended. And fights are not unusual. What's unusual is that Fowler was fighting with another defensive lineman.
Right.
Usually the fight occurs between the defensive line and the offensive line.
That's the rare part about that. I would agree with that. That was a little unusual.
And what exactly is going on? Because Fowler's suspended for the first game. And I guess I shouldn't entirely laugh at it, but it's kind of comical. The reason he's suspended is because he got mad because someone, he was driving through a neighborhood and somebody cursed at him. So he ended up going and breaking the guy's glasses and throwing his booze in the lake, which is.
Wait, not, he threw his what?
His booze.
Throw another man's booze in the lake.
He took it and threw the man's booze in the lake, which I actually like. That's kind of a power move. And perhaps the booze was related to the initial source of the cursing at Dexter Fowler for driving. But then why is he fighting with his teammates who play on the same position? Like, that would be, of all of the different sort of citizenship things, that for me would be incredibly troubling. I'm like, those are the guys that are supposed to like you, and you're right. fighting with them.
Yeah, that was very weird, no question about it. And so, nobody kind of understood where that was all coming from, but it was just very weird. And so, I guess you can say that we're in the dog days right now. I mean, we're now in, some teams are getting into the third week, and you got the second game coming up, and so there's more fights. I mean, I know there was some fights over in the Jets in the Redskins dual practice, and Todd Bowles wouldn't tolerate it, and he just basically started yelling at everybody and making them all do different runs. But that's what it comes down to. But yeah, in the case of Fowler, how do you get into it with one of your defensive line mates?
Yeah, and apparently we got our Fowlers confused. Dante Fowler is the football player. Dexter Fowler is an outfielder with the Cardinals, whose GM is, or one of the front office people, was complaining about the way he played. So our apologies to all of the Fowlers. The other thing, there was the fight between, was it the Washington and New Orleans?
No, it was Washington and the New York Jets.
And they get into a fight at practice. Joint practices are terrible ideas because
they're great.
This always happens. They always get in fights.
Yeah.
Like, you have two teams that go, and they ended up spilling over into an area where fans are at. Like, this is, that's a dumb idea to have joint practices so teams can fight each other.
Well, no, the key is just making sure the guys don't fight. I mean, put up enough fines, put up enough suspensions, and make sure the guys don't fight. But, I mean, you get good work. I mean, you think about, I mean, you're doubling up because, I mean, you can take your 90 guys, go against the 90 guys, and you're really getting twice the practice time that you would normally get.
Yeah, I liked that. We did that. The Arizona Cardinals had to come to Greeley, Colorado, which I have no idea why they would do that. But they were there.
Didn't it stink because of the paper mill?
Well, it stunk because there's a rendering plant there. Basically, that's where they
rendered hog fat.
It was like a slaughterhouse for beef, and it was awful. It would gag
worse than a paper mill. Paper mill
definitely
stink.
Well,
man.
I live down in Camas.
Camas absolutely.
Yeah.
Reeks.
So yeah, they're the paper makers down there.
They
Didn't
are.
You know that.
Whenever anybody smelled terrible, we would say, "Who has Camas in their pocket?" It was our witty sort of
that's
way.
Terrible. That's where I went to kindergarten.
Oh, really? In Camas?
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought it was cool.
Might explain why you can't smell, and you. Oh wait, you have a dog's nose. Why do you smell so well then? If you went to.
Oh, thank you for telling me I smell well, Danny. Are you done?
Yes.
Can I ask the professor a question?
Yes.
Now?
Yes, you can.
So anyway, we practiced with Arizona down in Colorado. I thought it was cool, but you're right. You know what you have to do? You have to get your coaches together and say, "Hey, we're not going to do this. We're not going to have any big fights." You know, and that's what needs to happen.
Speaking of coaches together, how about those Cleveland Browns?
What about them?
Well, did you see what happened today? You know, Todd Haley, who was not happy with his head coach because he wasn't working the guys hard enough, in his opinion, really got into it with Greg Williams, because apparently one of the defensive players on Greg Williams' defense for the Browns hit Baker Mayfield. And so, what he yelled out with a expletive in there, which we won't get into, is saying, "Winning teams don't hit the quarterback."
Yeah.
And just shouted that, which I'm sure you're going to see on Hard Knocks tomorrow. But
okay.
He got into it pretty bad with Greg Williams, and then they started exchanging words.
Wow. Well, you know, in you remember this, John? If you watched it, right? The Hard Knocks. Yeah. Todd Haley, I thought he was pretty disrespectful to Hugh Jackson. He was sitting there in the meeting, you know, basically disagreeing with Hugh Jackson about how to, you know, and to Haley's credit, he wanted more guys out on the field and stop resting guys. And he thought maybe Hugh Jackson was being a little bit too soft on the guys. But like Hugh Jackson was saying, "Hey, man, you got different decisions to make when you're sitting here in my chair. And he kept on with it. I thought it was,
And then he started rolling his eyes.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so
along with one of the other coaches.
I'd have to be on Greg Williams' side on this one, probably.
You're siding with Mr. Outside ACL.
Yeah, the psychopath, yeah, right?
The guy who spells his first name with two G's and then put on a goatee and glasses. He's still wearing those to try
he's
and
the witness protection
yeah,
program.
To confuse
yeah.
everyone who was
well,
there.
Well, the other thing in that, John, didn't he say I turned down eight jobs
seven.
To
he
get
turned
this?
Down seven jobs.
Seven jobs. I don't think he had seven jobs.
Sure he did.
Offers.
Yeah, there was going to be grocery store clerk. That was one of the jobs he turned down. Is like
Uber.
a pharmacy. Yeah, he was going to drive a Lyft. Yeah, or Uber driver that would be there. Like, I'm sure he had eight different jobs. I just don't believe they were in professional football.
No, because, again, so many teams were so gun-shy because of the suspension and how long he was out. I mean, this is a great coach. He really is a good coach. But he does have some interesting scheming things that he can do.
Are we sure he's a good coach?
Yes.
Are we really sure? Because he hasn't been on that many good teams. Like, he was a head coach with the Bills, and they weren't all that good.
Well, he wasn't a good head coach. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
That wasn't his forte. But, I mean, look how many good defenses he put together in Tennessee for Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
Where was he when he said outside ACL? Was he in New Orleans?
That was in New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah.
Bounty Gate.
That's right.
Take out his outside ACL as opposed
so stupid
to the inside ACL.
Yeah.
Is there a chance they don't finish last in their division this year?
No, none.
Zero.
Absolutely
Zilch.
Zero. Yeah, because, I mean, Baltimore, to me, looks like a playoff team. Pittsburgh is a playoff team, and Cincinnati is better than Cleveland. So I'm not talking about the city itself. I'm just talking about the team. I mean, maybe not by much. I think that the Browns can get to four or five wins. That would be a big season for them. But I still think you look at the Bengals as maybe a six- or seven-win team.
Hey, I really like the story that Bob Condotta wrote, Seattle Times, profiling Brian Schottenheimer of the Seahawks. He's talking about 53, and maybe this is a number that gets tossed out there a lot. I suppose it does, John. 53, the combination of pass completions and running plays. Out of 16 games, how many times do the Seahawks get at 53 or more this year, John?
I think that they can probably do it. By the way, I'll give you what that is. So he said 53?
Said 53.
So he got that's the updated number right now, and I want to thank Brian Schottenheimer for giving us the updated number because I know the Schottenheimer family was big into this. But I think they can probably do that 11 or 12 times. And again, what this is, it's called the theory of 49. And so what it was, if you take your completions plus your running attempts. We're not talking about successful and get to 49. This is back, in the old days when back seven, eight years ago, it was the theory of 49. So if you can get to 49, you're doing pretty well. You're going to have a pretty good offense. Now he's kind of upped it to 53, and I'm sure that probably is the updated number. So I want to thank Brian for giving us the theory of 49 now updated is now the theory of 53.
John, looks like Roquan Smith, the linebacker, or was he from Georgia?
Yeah,
from Georgia. It looks like he's going to sign his contract. He's going to end what? His holdout's been 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Three weeks,
because remember, they had the Hall of Fame game.
What was this all over?
Well, this was all over a couple things. I mean, he was still looking for offsets if he gets cut that last year. So in year four, if he gets cut and he keeps all his guarantees and then would double dip, and if he goes to another team, he can get whatever salary, and it's not offset from what he got from the from the Chicago Bears. The other thing is he was trying to get elimination of the guarantee. If you get suspended, and again, it depends on the type of suspension, but you get suspended, I mean, you now do not get any, you lose all your guarantees. Now, understand, I mean, he was the eighth pick in the draft, so his entire contract is guaranteed all 4 years. That's just by the way it is. But if you do get some kind of a suspension, you can do it. So he was fighting over suspension over the helmet hit. He was fighting over just any kind of suspension at all. And the Bears are among most teams that just basically say, no, too bad. It's like you get suspended. That's your problem.
All right, we got three holdouts left then after he reports, right? It's Aaron Donald, it's Khalil Mack.
Well, you got four because, I mean, you got four veterans right now. That's the last among the rookies. I mean, so now all the rookie class is done, signed, sealed, delivered. But, I mean, you still have Earl Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still have Aaron Donald, who they're making progress on. The word out of the Rams is that they may have something done before the second preseason game. So they may have something done by this weekend. So that could be encouraging. And, if the one everybody forgets about is Le'Veon Bell. And then, of course, you still get Khalil Mack. So four veterans that are still holding out.
We know that Bell will show up probably right before the regular season starts, right? Because he's not going to miss
He'll sign up Labor Day like he did last year.
Okay. The the three guys who we don't know will show up, Donald, Mack, and Thomas, what's the order of finish? Who gets in first? Who gets in second? Who returns to the team last out of those three?
Based on the way it's going, you still would have to say easily it's going to be Aaron Donald, number one, the fact that they're making progress and could get something done in the next 5 days. So you would say him, number one, and then kind of a battle between Thomas and Mack, and I would say Thomas maybe a little bit before Mack, but I don't say that with any confidence whatsoever, because I mean all Earl is doing is just losing money and being silly about it.
John, looks like Paxton Lynch, who was a first rounder a couple of years ago, he's been overtaken by a guy who was drafted in the seventh round last year, Chad Kelly. Holy mm-hmm. smokes, how disappointing!
Yeah, but remember, I mean, Kelly's, I mean, I know he was a seventh round pick, but I mean, you're talking about a nephew to Jim Kelly, and were it not for a knee injury that he had in, I think in college, I mean, he probably was going to be a higher pick than seven. I mean, so I'm not surprised about that whatsoever.
Still thing. The thing is, though, Paxton Lynch, a first rounder.
Oh, he's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see what's going to happen to him is that the Denver Broncos are just praying that somebody will pick him up for a seventh-round pick, because they would like to dump his remaining guarantees in his contract, and they'll give him away. I mean, if you want Paxton Lynch, I guarantee you call and offer a seventh-round pick in 2020, they'll take him in a heartbeat, very much like Corey Coleman. I mean, the Cleveland Browns dumped Corey Coleman because, one, he can't play receiver, and then, two, he had guarantees in his contract, as all the rookies in the top 22 always have.
All right, Professor, we always appreciate it. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast 710sports.com. The Mariners riding a four-game win streak into Oakland. This is a series that could decide their season. Are we being too overreactive? We'll tell you what to look for next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming on every device on the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB, their brown sugar bourbon, and the Mariners in Oakland against a team. The A's haven't exactly cooled off, but you certainly feel better about the Mariners than you did. It's amazing how much four games can change about the way you feel about a team. This Mariners team that couldn't beat a Texas team that, while they've been hot recently, is going nowhere. The one sort of also ran in the division that couldn't beat a Toronto team that is, in fact, mailing it in. And then you win four of four games in Houston and move on to take on now the A's, where, look, you feel that momentum, as crazy as it sounds, has switched very firmly behind the Mariners.
Yeah, you do feel that way, and yet you're right, Danny. I mean, I was just looking at it. I was reading a story today. The A's are 36-12 their last 48 games, and the Mariners now just a game and a half back and four games behind the Astros. No one seems to think, though, that the Mariners have a shot at winning the AL West. Fangraphs, 2% chance for the Mariners, even though they're just four games back. I would think, though, that if you're one of those players on the Mariners right now, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, okay. All of a sudden, we can go toe-to-toe with the Astros. We won at Minute Maid Park. You're 7-6 against the Astros now in the season series. And okay, yeah, they were missing Altuve, and I don't know who else they were missing, but they got Correa back, and you face those four pitchers. I think it's encouraging in a lot of ways, not only in the regular season and bolstering their playoff hopes, but if you were to face the Astros in the playoffs, you can go back to a series like this one and think, hey, wait a minute. Maybe they're not that much better than us, and we can take them.
Yes. Also, the Mariners are going to get a pretty big hitter back tomorrow.
Yeah.
You saw him Friday night. Jessamine saw him Friday night in Everett.
It was so much fun. Wasn't it, Jess? I mean, it was a good time up there, and Cano didn't disappoint at all. That first hit that he had down the left field line, and then the double play that he turned. And then the home run in the seventh inning, I think it was, grand slam. He steps to the plate, and you're thinking, man, Grandma's getting the salami out. And sure enough, she had the rye bread and mustard, too.
He certainly made it look effortless again.
It's not.
It was the same exact style as he always plays.
Is he still cool?
He's still the coolest man in any room, on any field, in any stadium.
If it's in single A, though, you don't get out the rye bread, right? It's just regular old white bread.
Yeah. He was in mid-season form with trotting to first, Dave. He was. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be rusty with that.
That part of it, though, that's as much as you point the Astros and Altuve and Springer are out, and Correa came back the second game of that series, and the additions that the A's have made, what, Fears and adding Yuris Familia to their bullpen for
and,
this stretch.
And Fernando.
And Fernando.
Oh, man. Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to seeing him tonight.
Ethan Strauss, who is, he covers the Warriors down in the Bay Area, and tweeted out, he goes, I don't know, this guy shoots imaginary arrows after making successful performances. This is the best thing I've ever seen.
Well, he didn't know about it?
And I reacted to it by saying that, you know what? I remember that stage of the Fernando Rodney experience, too, when it was all sunshine, lollipops, and imaginary arrows being rifled into the stratosphere.
You know who loved that? Jim.
Logan Morrison. Because Logan Morrison had run over and chart where they were going.
Whatnot. Yeah, well, so you're saying you do want to see their closer?
Well, no, I want to see Rodney at some point tonight.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that means he'll kick his pants and America's will get a win.
I just get a kick out of him.
Yeah. Well, Robinson Cano, you mentioned, Danny, and it sounded like he's pretty important to this team. When we talked to Paxton earlier, he talked about him coming back. And look, man, the guy was hitting .287. When he left, had 4 home runs, 23 RBIs, and that was May 13th, so he played in 39 games, so pretty excited. And I don't think it's, you know, there was some talk about, well, maybe the chemistry and whatnot, whether or not that was going to get disrupted, but I don't know. We're kind of long past that, I would think, and as you've been saying for a long time, Danny, this is a big hole in your lineup that's you're getting some help, some big time help coming here.
Another change in the lineup, and Shannon Dreyer just tweeted this out, and Jess let us know about it, that D. Gordon has been scratched from the lineup tonight. Mm. Andrew Romine taking his spot at second base. That's certainly not good news.
I think his shoulder's been bothering him. Maybe
yeah.
Didn't bother him last night. I mean, because that had happened the prior day on Saturday when he slid into somebody's shin or something, right?
Yeah, there'd be a temptation if I'm Scott Service right now. There's part of me that wonders maybe put D. Gordon on the DL for a couple weeks. You've got Robinson Cano coming back tomorrow. You can slide him in and play second base. I don't think D's healthy, and it's aside from him just being scratched and having a sore shoulder. I think we've all looked at the way he's moved. He came back from the All-Star break, and the story was that, hey, he got a couple days. He feels better on his toe. I think he might be someone that would benefit from a couple weeks off, and you'll have the opportunity to do that with Robinson Cano coming back here. Would you consider doing that?
Boy, well, it just depends. Well, I mean, I don't know how. It seems like the shoulder injury is minor. I mean, it wasn't enough to keep him out of the game yesterday, so he pinch hit, and yet it seems to be lingering a little bit. And then, Danny, you've talked about his foot, and maybe that's still an issue too. He still looks plenty fast to me, but I would like to see him go back to center field, actually. I know there's this talk about, well, you got to have him ready for second base if you make the playoffs. I'm kind of feeling more and more that your better chance of making the playoffs is if you have Cano playing second base full-time and put Gordon back out in the outfield.
No way, man. What's the sound on board for all hands on deck? Chuck Knox used to do that all the time. All hands on deck! Need all hands on deck.
Can I get the horn one more time?
I'd like to hear the horn.
Okay, thank you.
Something like that. I don't even know if that's a call
like
for
it was,
all.
It was kind of a deflated
all
trumpet.
Hands that would on be deck.
The, it's like the guy at the Mariner game in Peoria. Though.
Oh. And you know what? If you start treating D. Gordon all of a sudden that way, then he's going to start getting hurt. Because that's what happens with pitchers. They treat them like they're made of glass, and all of a sudden, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, we're going to treat you like super, you know, oh, you're a little bit hurt. Well, we'll put you on the DL for 10 days, and then all of a sudden, they end up getting hurt. They become more fragile. No way, man. I mean, D. Gordon, to me, he looks full speed to me. The other thing is, I think you'd have a hard time convincing him to do that, because he looks like, clearly, he loves to play. So,
where do you want to see Cano, Dave?
I guess second. You know, second base. I mean, where else? Second base and DH.
Well, you could platoon him with Healy, though. But Healy's been hot. I mean, the home run last night or yesterday and then 3 hits the night before.
I am not excited to see Robinson Cano at first base just because I don't know. You know, he's not used to it. I think Ryan Healy has done a really good job defensively over there. And he's been a clutch hitter this year. So I'd say Cano in between second base and DH.
I got a kick out of it when Cano said that when he was playing first base, I think for Everett, or maybe it was Tacoma, where he was every ground ball he had to remember to go over and cover first base. Couldn't you just see Robbie at some point?
Yes.
Blowing bubbles and spitting seeds out there and a ground ball to short, and he just kind of had a forgot to go over the first moment.
Kind of like that time he tried to walk home.
Yeah, that one was tough. That one was tough. I think you've got to play him at first base. I think the majority of his time should come at first base. And that does come with a I'm not certain about the sacrifice you'll make defensively, because I've thought that Ryan Healy's really impressive there. And Healy did. He was kind of a hero in the Houston series with the timely hitting. But, man, he had been on a skid before that. He doesn't ever walk. I think first base is the spot that you've got to play him and then use him to give guys time off. There's part of me that thinks that D. Gordon, it's sort of the ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. If you gave him a couple weeks, he might come back looking significantly better, because I do think that it has impacted his game. And his
didn't they give him a week or so? They gave him 10 days off in July or something like that, didn't they?
Well, that was around the All-Star break, and tried to give it to him, and I just wonder if and maybe it's not going to help, and maybe it is just too far gone, and it's only going to be a couple months before he feels better. But he's now slid down in the lineup. He was hitting ninth tonight. He's been scratched, if you're just joining us. D. Gordon scratched from the lineup tonight. Andrew Romine there. Guillermo Heredia is in center tonight. They're going to play Maben in left. A little bit of a different look there. But, man, we haven't even talked about Heredia's catch. Talk about anybody who had questions about why Gamble got sent down, and I'll raise my hand and say I was one of those people. Well, that was a game that Guillermo Heredia, the fact that he was here, very well could have won for you with the play that he made in center in the eighth inning of that game on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, but how many defensive gems do you need for the number of at-bats that you watch from him?
He won a game, though. He won that game. They don't win that game if you don't have Guillermo Heredia on that
roster.
Would have
made that catch?
No, I don't. I mean, that was an incredible catch and throw that he made there. It is Danny Davenport. We're going to sweep the dial, and that's going to include college coaches. It's the most fertile ground for scandal in today's sports environment, and we'll tell you why.
All hands on deck.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
You and me talk. Just give me a name that you think would be good as an offensive coordinator. What if I throw a name out there? Mark Trussman. It's someone you might know, right? That's maybe the best you can give me.
Yeah.
How did that guy get an NFL head coaching job? I mean, honestly, like, how does that happen?
By sleeping in his car.
And
that
part's endearing. Here's the thing, though. Jim Tomsula is an incredibly lovable guy. And he's back coaching the defensive line in Washington. And he explained the secret to enjoying a really cheap beer like Pabst Blue Ribbon, which we used to refer to when we drank it as being paptized, is putting a pinch of salt into the beer. That it'll change the entire taste.
Well, he said it would change your life.
Change your life?
Yeah.
Well, that might not be necessarily a positive thing.
So he's in Washington now, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. I mean, he's a lovable character. I don't know, football coaches, like, I'll make fun of them sometimes. It's in an endearing way. Like, I love football coaches just for what they do, because it's a lot of hours, and I just think they're a humble group of guys, and so I'll always defend them. But yeah, he is some of them I want. I don't know about Greg Williams, the outside ACL guy, but anyway I love that that he's somewhere. And he basically said that he will coach until every single team kicks him out of coaching.
Have you ever thought about putting a pinch of salt in a beer?
No.
I mean I like it on a margarita, you know, around the rim, but I've never thought about putting salt in a beer.
My dad used to salt some weird things. Like, you ever salt an apple?
No.
Yeah, slice open an apple and salt it. Yeah, it's
especially
great.
A green apple.
Yes, green apples. That's where you do it. But, yeah, I've never done that with beer.
Huh. So there it is.
It'll change your life, apparently.
Apparently. Here's the other thing. This is from the Twitter account of Craig Hoffman, whom I'm unfamiliar with, but it says, a Jets reporter just asked which coach was screaming F-bombs. I told him it was Jim Tomsula. Oh, the Jets reporter said. Well, he needs to watch his language. There are kids here.
If you can't curse at football practice, come on.
A kid died on your watch. So at the bare minimum, when that happens, you owe it to that kid. You owe it to his parents to say, hold on a minute. Let us take a significant look at everything we are doing to find out if we did something wrong. And it seems like that gets lost in this process of here. Well, who's saying this and who's saying what and what are their motivations? A kid's dead. A father doesn't have a son. A mother doesn't have a son. That is the only thing that matters here.
It's Trey Wingo talking about in Maryland. And look, Maryland's not a very good football team. They have a coach, DJ Durkin, who has... He worked under Harbaugh before. He's worked under some pretty high-powered, prominent coaches, but apparently they've been running these hellish sort of workouts, and one of the players on the team over the offseason died. And the details of it, some of which the school has disputed, was that the kid had what was described by some people as a seizure at 5 o'clock, and medical personnel wasn't called there until... almost like an hour later, 45 minutes to an hour later. Now, the school said there's never been any report that the player, the man who ended up passing away, had suffered a seizure that early in practice. But now the coach, the strength and conditioning coach, who and the head athletic trainer are all on leave as they investigate what was said to be a sort of a culture of sort of intimidation and pushing kids beyond their limits. The hard part of this story is the difference between toughening up football players and putting kids at risk. And it sure seems like this coach and his staff might have lost their bearings on what that actually was.
Well, do you guys remember back when Corey Stringer died in Minnesota Viking? You know, the bigger guys, you know, and this kid was a big kid. You got to watch out for him and take care of him. So... yeah, you just hope that there wasn't anything that was, you know, that went too wrong where these guys just, you know, totally neglected the situation. And sometimes, you know, these things just happen, but, you know, you hope it's not like they're trying to take the whole toughness thing a little bit too far, because I really believe that there's some value in that, but obviously you want to make sure you're careful.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Dave, because these are some of the details of the ESPN report that prompted the suspensions, and I'd be interested in, did this cross the line? There was one about a kid that couldn't put on weight, so coaches were sitting with him at the cafeteria and watching him and forcing him to eat until he threw up.
That's ridiculous.
Which I'd never heard of before. Like, that seemed... that there was other things like, hey, you have to sit and eat candy bars while your teammates work out because you won't lose weight. And that seemed like, well, it seems kind of old school and a little bit barbaric.
It's barbaric, is what it is.
But that's not. But having a kid eat until he throws up, that's insane.
It's just stupid. Absolutely stupid. And with the amount of research that they have now, and, you know, you see how good the Seahawks are taken care of, you know, with the nutrition and everything. Come on, man. There's way too much information now to go to some extreme like that, you know that you're going to eat till you throw up. Well, and then what's the point if the kid's throwing up?
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, obviously there's a lot of ways that they have a lot of research now, and most of these big time programs have like nutritionists and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's really a shame. You hope that maybe something comes out of it where they're able to more closely monitor players, especially when you're in like extreme situations like that.
Tiger Woods had the sports world transfixed on golf for no other reason than pure, unadulterated, beautiful golf. And it reminded us of what sports is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be the ultimate distraction from what really ails us in our society. It's supposed to be about something that pulls us away from the dregs and the drama of what we have to deal with in real life. It's supposed to be about the closest thing to a meritocracy. And yesterday, that's what it came down to.
I thought it was just a golf tournament. I don't think there is any. It's just golf. Like, what's Stephen A. going on and on about?
What's adulterated golf?
Unadulterated.
Unadulterated.
Yeah, that's what we saw. I want to know what adulterated golf is.
That was what Tiger did early on.
They don't wear pants.
That's what he did early on in his career. It was adulterated golf involving Perkins waitresses. Servers.
I every time I just sit there and I go, that guy makes seven figures. Eight figures or whatever. I don't know. What's a million? How many figures? Seven? Yeah. Whatever. I just sit there and I'm thinking to myself, man, I need to come in every day and just like, the Mariners, they need to make a move with Felix Hernandez. What are they doing? They're just leaving him out there. Why don't they do something with Felix? He was the king. Long live the king. Maybe I could get $7 million, $1 million, seven figures, whatever. I just, that guy kills me. I don't know how, I don't like him. I just don't like him at all.
His very first move
Nobody
as the
talks
executive
like that.
Was to sign Lamar Odom, who was on crack.
People don't talk like that.
Yes, he does.
Well, no, not normal
sure,
people.
You just heard it, Jim.
Jim, tell me what the four. Jim A. Moore. Tell me what the four-game series in Houston meant to you as a Mariners fan.
I'd rather make three figures.
No, come
than
on.
Talk like
I want to hear. I want to hear you shift back into
what did that series mean?
Yeah,
that series meant it all, Danny. It meant so much to the Seattle Mariners and their chances of beating the Houston Astros 17 long years without going to the playoffs. Can you believe the Mariners and what they're doing right now? Can I? Where's Pride Mark? Can I get seven figures for that?
We'll go see. We'll get back to you on that.
You better
that
make
one
sure the number of figures you get that part right.
Well, I know. I was off on that. Maybe I need eight figures.
My wife
that
told me one time there's a girl that was like bragging about herself in the bathroom. She's like, yeah, well, this is the kind of face that can get you four figures. I'm like, oh, so you can make $9,000? Is that right? Not over 10.
I was going to say, for an evening, that might be quite expensive. It's Danny David
Moore.
Oh,
it wasn't a one-time deal, Danny.
Coming up next.
That guy's awful. He's just absolutely
no, he's
awful. Yeah,
on,
he is. He's terrible. Skip Bayless is awful. All those guys that just scream like that, I hate them. Don't you?
No.
Why? How can you like Skip Bayless or Stephen A. Smith when
like
they're
Skip,
just yelling at you?
I think he's disingenuous. I find Stephen A. Smith amusing.
He's entertaining. Come on. He's on crack.
Yeah.
You can't. There's nobody that can do that.
It's Danny David Moore. We've got Uncle Will. Will Disley is going to join us next, our Seahawks spotlight.